Good afternoon, and welcome to our broadcast reading of The Journal of Ambrose Cothambutel, Captain of the First Chartered European Expedition to Lumpaland.
August 20th, 1703. We've made our first contact with the indigenous peoples of Lumpaland, the Oompa Loompa. Previous, unsubstantiated records of the citizens of this strange new continent did not prepare me for the countenance of these similarly strange people. There have been numerous prior reports by individuals who claim to have interacted with the peoples of Lumpaland. Many a naive sailor has described them as similar in appearance to the colored people of the African continent, while many a circus master in our country has advertised exclusive exhibition of reported Oompa Loompas, who are, in fact, merely individuals suffering from dwarfism. Both of these accounts are incorrect. The physical appearance of the Oompa Loompa is indeed more fantastical than the various fictions which claim to describe it. Their stature is indeed dwarf-like. However, their skin is the color of a freshly skinned carrot, orange bordering crimson. Their hair is a deep forest green, with the exception of the eyebrows, which are large, bushy tufts of silvery white.
It's interesting that this entry mentions the conflicting accounts of the Oompa Loompa's appearance in the early 18th century. Over 200 years later, author Roald Dahl, in the first edition of his biography on Willy Wonka, the wildly successful chocolatier, infamous for his capture and exploitation of an entire nation of Oompa Loompas, described them in his novel as simply African slaves, due to an oversight in his research. A later edition was released, changing them to Caucasian dwarfs, but it wasn't until decades later, when the piece was adapted for cinema, that actual Loompa American actors portrayed the Oompa Loompas, not only lending credibility to the film, but also setting a benchmark for Loompa Americans in Hollywood cinema. August 29, 1703. On the Language of the Oompa Loompas. The language of the people of Lumpaland is indeed one of the most remarkable linguistic discoveries I've made on my many expeditions into the strange and dark lands that dot our vast globe. In terms of syntax, their language, and I hazard to report this as the council is likely to suspect it fabrication, is identical to the Queen's English. Their vocabulary and grammar are completely intelligible to the crew and myself, indeed to any individual who speaks the English language. The Oompa Loompa manner of speaking is rather peculiar, however. All speech is uttered in the form of didactic verse. Perhaps the speech pattern is best described through use of an example. While a traditional British vendor may say, "Sir, would you like to purchase a fine fig pudding?" the shopkeepers in Lumpaland would say the following, "Oompa Loompa Doompity-Doo, I have a wise suggestion for you. Oompa Loompa Doompity-Dee, if you are wise, you will listen to me. What happens if you don't eat enough figs, opting to dine on the fodder of pigs? Mineral deficiency and increasing girth, figs are the finest fruit on the earth." The Oompa Loompas also have no written language, as anything sung in their spoken word is so memorable that it sticks fast in the mind for weeks or months afterwards and makes written documentation utterly unnecessary.
September 2nd, 1703. The Snozzwanger. Today I was made aware that there are, in fact, intelligent races other than the Oompa Loompa in Lumpaland. I use the term intelligent races as I am not sure I can, in all conscience, call the creatures I observed intelligent peoples. The fringe of the Oompa Loompa township in which I currently find myself was attacked by a clutch of Snozzwangers at about noontime. The horrific creatures strode into the outskirts of town and laid waste to an entire small community of Oompa Loompas who were utterly defenseless. I was brought to the scene of the confrontation by a number of concerned Oompa Loompas who had been impressed with and terrified of my musket a few days earlier, and who were certain it was their only hope to curtail the attack. While my men and I were able to safely chase them away, I am certain that if it weren't for the shock and surprise at seeing such large armed men come to the Loompas' defense, the Snozzwangers could have easily overpowered even us. The Snozzwanger is a formidable figure, to say the least. The stoutest stood easily a head taller than I, their stature exaggerated further by tall crested helmets worn atop their heads. Their faces are shrouded betwixt their helmets and the long cowled capes they wear. Their long, thick legs make up a two-thirds portion of their total height and are adorned with brightly colored stockings. The Snozzwangers we happened across were armed, with what appeared to be a whip in one hand and large mallet-like bludgeoning instrument in the other. I learned later from the Oompa Loompas with whom I had discussed the altercation that this mallet is from whence the name Snozzwanger is derived. This device, they told me, is used to wang. Wang, insofar as I can tell, is synonymous with bludgeon. Initially, the Snozwangers wanged a bizarre specimen of crystalline vegetation found hereabouts called the schnoz. The schnoz's crystalline shell conceals a sticky fluid substance precious to the Snozwangers, though exactly why they find it so precious is a mystery to the Oompas I talk to. They now have a broader range of wanging targets, including, quite evidently, the Oompa Loompa. I also learned that the Snozwangers who happened upon this village were emaciated, lending reason to their wanton attack. The grotesque length of their legs signified their hunger, as when satiated, their gullet expands and overtakes well over one half of their leg length. The cowls they wear over their faces and upper torsos conceal a large and monstrous toothy maw, with which they are able to consume whole Oompa Loompas. Truly a terrifying beast.
September 22nd, 1703. The Wang Doodle. Never in my travels have I encountered such a peculiar beast as the Wang Doodle. Though it is apparently a chief prey of the Snozwanger, the Wang Doodle is by no means a benign entity from the point of view of the Oompa Loompas. The Wang Doodle's appearance is beyond even the most fanciful woodcuts from the pages of the most imaginative zoologies of other lands. It most closely resembles, and the council will forgive me if this appears an attempt at comedy, an enormous green squash lacking a stalk, or perhaps a large deep green kidney bean situated vertically. The Wang Doodle has no appendages to speak of, its only features being a pair of widely situated eyes, three wispy and seemingly useless tendrils atop what I hazard to call its head, and a mouth, highly reminiscent of a human's, although much, much larger and in desperate need of orthodontry. It is as tall as a man, although its height is augmented slightly by what I consider its most incredible factor. The Wang Doodle, having no legs or other walking appendages, floats seemingly effortlessly above the ground at a height of approximately 0.3 meters. I had the occasion to observe just such a creature recently, as I paid a visit to a dignitary in a Loompa village the men and I were sent to. A solitary Wang Doodle found its way to the village, heralded by its loud, obtrusive call, an obnoxious droning moan, as that of a dullard. While the Wang Doodle did appear to have no belligerent intent, its idle, slow, steady drifting led it through many a building wall and overturned many a cart, causing a great deal of damage to both the Oompa Loompas and their property. However, the Oompa Loompas, always an utterly peaceable people, left the Wang Doodle to its lackadaisical rampage. After observing the Oompa Loompas' reaction to both this creature and the Snozwanger, I must say I am amazed that these people have not utterly perished from the many perils that plague their own land. There is undoubtedly much more to learn of the Oompa Loompa culture. September 30th, 1703, the Hornswogglers. I have managed to persuade an adolescent Oompa Loompa named Daraldin Beardyhead to join me as a guide by offering him a sack of rich chocolates and the protection of my musket. I was interested in exploring the wild north that the southern Oompa Loompas considered forbidden terra incognita. My entreaties to Mr. Beardyhead were first met with a series of verses stressing the importance of caution, but I managed to win him over with my own pithy song on the virtues of adventure and stoutness of heart. I am learning quickly. By noon on September 28th, we encountered the bluish ridge that divides north and south Oompa land and furtively peered over. The ridge concealed a gaudy river valley that stretched east and west as far as the eye could see. Wind whipped between the two mountain ranges, making the brightly colored grasses and flowers undulate in bold waves, giving the valley the appearance of a teeming rainbow sea. The thin dark line of the river was shrouded in a white and silvery mist that subtly held the amethyst, emerald, and topaz tones of its surroundings. Not sensing any danger, I signaled to Daraldin, and we ran wildly down the slope, delighting in the ardent sunlight and invigorating wind that swirled the landscape around us. We were swept up in the joy of frolicking and were later amazed to discover that it had taken us till evening to reach the bottom. We set up camp near the river that, and I swear upon everything sacred so that you may accept the verity of this, was composed of liquid chocolate. The Oompa Loompas being a chocolate-loving people, I wondered why they did not exploit this fantastic resource. Mr. Beardyhead could only say that it was forbidden. As night fell, we gathered up beds of downy flora and lay upon them. As I waited for Mr. Beardyhead to fall asleep, I caught sight of a procession of what looked like turquoise Oompa Loompas, with purple hair, some distance away. Their faint singing seemed to have a different structure than the one which I had become accustomed to. Instead of bum-ba-bum-ba-bum-bum-bum-ba, it went bum-ba-ba-bum-bum-bum-ba-ba-bum-bum. What a strange mystery. Once Daraldin had drifted off, I snuck down to the river and scooped a handful into my mouth. It was the most precious and beautiful thing to ever pass through my lips. It was, however, followed by a terrible, circumambient rumbling. I fell to the ground and awaited whatever ghastly fate was coming to me. The very landscape was coming alive. What were once rocks adorned with blue and gold lichen were now gigantic, solemn heads. Sparse hills of rust-colored grass revealed themselves as the monster's shaggy flanks. From the monster's backs were thrust great tubes like insane pipe organs. The entire cosmos seemed to tremble at their unfathomably deep and sublime music. I fell into a swoon.
September 30th, 1703 continued. The Cultures of Oompaland. Daryldin Beardyhead and I awoke in the care of one of the turquoise-colored Oompa Loompas I had seen the previous night. We were in a settlement comprised of triangular huts painted in violet, lavender, white, and sky-blue stripes. He introduced himself as Fluky Flubdubber and explained that he and his party had delivered us from the massive Hornswogglers, guardians of the Chocolate River Flim. I was, I believe quite understandably, astonished by all that had occurred, and I questioned Fluky on a number of subjects ranging from the geography of the northern lands to what he knew of the different Oompa Loompa cultures. This, briefly, is what I learned. I am not in the north, per se, but in the middle lands. Some distance north of the River Flim is the Fizzy River Flam. Beyond Flam is the true north that nobody dares to visit because it is too strange. Approximately 7 large tribes of Oompa Loompas peacefully co-inhabit the middle lands. Fluky is a Floompa Loompa. Other tribes include the seafoam green-skinned and silver-haired Voompa Loompas, the golden Noompa Loompas, and the half-breed Chupa Chupas, among others. Each tribe has a distinctive meter to their speech. The tribes were once unified under the righteous emperor Chuggy Budflap the 38th. He brought the disparate peoples together by building a vast factory to create multicolored knickknacks and pins. The factory was destroyed by vermicious canids on a catastrophic romp, and Chuggy Budflap was eaten. Disorder prevailed. Eventually, the Oompas organized themselves into tribes. The sacred seers of the Noompa Loompa tribe prophesy that someday a man will come from beyond the great ocean to deliver the people and put them to work in a factory alike unto the one of old. How very strange. Tomorrow I shall explore the middle lands with Derek.
October 5th, 1703. The Vermicious Canids. Daryldin and I are currently sitting in a broad green clearing, sparkling with sunlight under a sapphire sky. This clearing contains a curious feature that we are observing attentively from a distance. If the clearing is more or less elliptical, the mysterious phenomenon and we represent the two foci, the distance between us being approximate to the distance from one shore of a medium-sized river to the other. How do I describe such a thing? Though the atmosphere is impeccably limpid, there hovers above the line of trees a globular white cloud, held up by 20 or so of the thinnest yellow stilts that every so often bend slightly in the middle. I have decided to inquire further into the mystery. Daryldin is preparing my musket, and I will try blowing into a Hornswoggler trumpet that I received from Fluky. The first trial. A rich sound reverberates throughout the clearing. I imagine I see the cloud dissipating a bit. The stilts are surmounted by darkish clots. The second trial. The dark clouds seem to be the bodies of hideously tall creatures. The cloud is nearly gone. The strange legs are bending with increasing frequency, and the creatures seem to be organizing themselves into some kind of formation. The third trial. Good heavens! They are striding towards us. I have never seen something so graceful and yet so terrifying. Daryldin looks pale. He grips the musket. Their faces are white with smiling pink mouths, a hooked nose, and glowing yellow eyes. They are almost here.
It is here that the journal of Ambrose Cothenbutel breaks off. At the bottom of the page, Daryldin Beardyhead scrawled this verse.
Oompa loompa doompity doo, I've got a perfect puzzle for you. Oompa loompa doompada dee, if you are wise, you'll listen to me. What do you get when you travel along, sticking your nose where it doesn't belong? You will face death by a vermicious canid, just as Ambrose Cothenbutel did. You will get no mercy. Repeat, repeat, and then it cuts off.